A year ago today, Brian and I made the best business decision ever. Still not sure why Nisha accepted and why she agreed to join Drive-Thru HR, but she did, and thank God for it. Nisha, happy one-year anniversary.
Hey, thank you. I'm so happy today.
Awesome.
And the unique thing about it is Valentine's Day, right? So happy Valentine's Day to all.
Yeah, it's truth, and it's beautiful here. So let's just hope it makes it over the weekend, and we can have beautiful weather over the weekend. We have wonderful guests, and we're going to have a jam-packed. This is one of those shows where you actually wish you had scheduled a 60-minute show, but we'll try and cram as much great content into 30 minutes as humanly possible. And with that said, I want to thank everyone for listening to Drive-Thru HR today. And let's kick it over to Natalie. Natalie, tell us a little bit about yourself and also tell us a little bit about RoundPeg.
Great. Thanks so much. So I'm here with my co-founder, Brent Daly, and our company is RoundPeg. RoundPeg unleashes business potential using culture science. So in a nutshell, what our organization does and our software does is allows organizations to attack real business problems using robust culture data and systems. So organizations that we're working with these days are really focused on attacking issues around increasing innovation, around reducing silos across the organization in order to be more efficient, shifting their culture to be more customer focused. So big business issues that that really matter for the well-being and performance of the organization, and culture sits at the heart of each of those issues, and we have really robust tools to allow organizations to attack those problems.
Fantastic. What's top of mind for you these days, especially you and Brent both interact with a lot of clients. What's top of mind for them these days?
Well, first of all, Nisha, happy anniversary. And I think we've been seeing more and more customers approach us, really looking at innovation. So I know Natalie mentioned it, but and the interesting part about it is that these aren't the market laggards. These are the folks that are leading their categories, and they're really trying to outdo themselves. They, while they've taken an interesting approach and have been very successful in the past, they're starting to think about it in a little bit different way, where the recognition is that the team creates innovation, not the lone wolf individual, and the way that they have engaged us. So we've been working with Nike around team construction and really trying to figure out what are some of those not just the cultural values that we all have to share in order to be innovative, but what are some of those ones that we want to rub against each other and create some of that diversity of thought and the diversity of action?
Okay, so you've mentioned, both of y'all have mentioned, and Brent, I need to tell you, thank you. You sent me a bottle of 10-cup whiskey, and those guys are trying to buy my domain, so I'm familiar with them. But I have not cracked open the bottle yet, but I promise to do so this weekend, so I'll be able to report back on how the great whiskey experiment went. Anyway, you both of y'all have mentioned cultural data and cultural science and culture data, culture science. And the first question is, HR, as it relates to culture, already gets flagged for being soft. They already get flagged for, a lack of understanding or adeptness with science and math and technology, et cetera. So what is this data, this culture data, and this culture science that you speak of?
Yeah, that's exactly right, William. And what we really focus on is bringing rigor to the world of HR. So the culture science is really grounded in over 100 years of research that shows that the cultural wiring of an individual really predicts their ability to thrive and perform within an organization. And layered on top of that, there's great research that's decades old that comes out of Cal Berkeley that shows that our core values Our personal core values are really quite hard set by the time we reach adulthood, by the time we enter the work world, and they describe our behavior at work on a daily basis more than any other single factor. So for a leader in an organization to be able to understand how their people are wired culturally gives them great information about how their best, what's going to predict their highest and best performance, and thus the productivity and profitability of the organization.
Just a quick build on Natalie as well is that we really take a bit of a different approach, and so this isn't just a culture survey. It really is combining several different things that allow us to take more of a full census approach so that we can identify what the personal values are of everybody who walks through that front door every day, so that we can then aggregate that up to say, well, here's what it's like to work on this particular team. Here's what it's like to work in this particular department from a quantitative perspective. So really being able to use some of that objective data to show not just what are some of the strengths of values within each of these groups, but what are some of the differences across the organization. And, you know, it really is a bit of a right jab to the jaw when we are able to sit around the table with the executive team to say, you know, you all as a team of executives look like this, and you value A, B, and C. The rest of the organization, they value X, Y, and Z. And so, you know, here are some of those frustrations that you all are going to feel, and, you know, therefore those five values that are on the lobby wall, you know, let's call those aspirational. That's not your true culture.
Well, Brent, as you said, every team has its own culture, right? So for an organization's culture, or let us say, to measure or assess, you know, the cultural aspect and to make sure everybody is on the same page, how do we do that?
Well, it's a good question. And the way that we look at it is you will have cultural differences across the organization, and you want those cultural differences. So you will look for creativity out of your R&D group. You may not want that out of your accounting group. But the key is really focusing on what are some of those core values. What's that very limited set of 3 to 5 values that we want everybody across the entire organization to share? You know, this is the glue that binds us all together. So, you know, as a quick metaphor, and it's a little bit nerdy, but, you know, thinking back to high school chemistry, you know, when you think about the makeup of a molecule, you have this really strong nucleus that binds all these electrons and protons that are, you know, flying around it together, and it keeps them from really spinning off into orbit. And so, you know, that's what we're talking about, that nucleus. Those are your core values.
Great. So, Natalie, while you're working with your clients, I have this question that has come up in my mind. You know, how can a culture that is damaged by, let's just say, due to trust or any other issues, so what actions must be taken by a leader?
So the very first step when you have any issue within the organization, particularly regarding culture, is to get a very good, robust measurement of what's actually happening in the culture. So most organizations that embark on culture change initiatives to fix a broken or damaged culture, to your point, they start with assumptions that are made usually by a leadership team, often in isolation, around what's wrong and what needs to be fixed. And so that's one of the main reasons that the vast majority, over 70% of culture initiatives, fail. Because what we really need to do is to start, the very first step needs to be to gather really robust data about the actual culture, how the culture is really functioning. And to do that, to go back to a couple of our previous points, you need to be able to understand what the personal core values are of everybody who makes up the company. At Rompeg, we think of culture as how we do things here in our company, very simply. And to really understand how things are being done in an organization, you need to understand what the personal core values are of the people who make up that organization, from the folk, you know, from the entry level folks to the CEO, from people who started yesterday to those individuals who have been here 30 years. So the very first step is to get a really accurate measurement of what's happening in the culture. Then you can compare that to where you want to be as an organization. And that's where the heavy lifting of leadership comes in, and it's critical work. absolutely, to identify that aspirational culture. And then the third step is to look at, well, what's the gap between the two and how are we going to resolve those as an organization? So we try to keep it really simple to attack those first three steps when talking about shifting a broken culture.
Nice. Natalie, we tend to treat people like robots. How can we make work personal?
Yeah, well, we think we've been focusing a lot on that at Roundpeg, the fact that how we mentor, develop, and engage our employees has to be personal, because every one of us is wired differently. And going back to our initial some of our initial comments around the fact that people are pretty hardwired by the time they reach adulthood. So it's not that we can't change as individuals, but statistically, we don't change very much in terms of our core values and attributes. So how do you make work personal, or perhaps how do you make coaching, development, engagement personal? Is number one is to understand how your people are wired. So again, we keep it simple. We're going back to that same principle of, you need to be able to evaluate in some way what are the core values, the core attributes of your people. And once you know that, you can use their unique strengths and really leverage them so that they can bring their best to the table every single day as part of your workforce. Where they differ from the culture of either the company or the team or from you as a manager, rather than trying to change those individuals, which we know, again, statistically doesn't work very well, we can use that data about how they're wired to really support them to manage those differences they have with the organization and with their team, so they can still thrive and be productive in their roles despite the differences that exist.
And I think you can look at it in two different ways. So the first is, you know, how well one fits within the environment will determine the upside. You know, what is their performance potential? And then, you know, how you actually go about communicating with them, rewarding them, you know, providing them with all the tools that they need, you know, getting them on the right projects. You know, that's the amount of that's how well they'll be engaged. And both of those really are personal. And you know, I think we've all had jobs where we have not performed at our best, and you know, we felt like we were a complete outcast and a misfit within the culture, or our manager just didn't understand us. And you know, in my particular case, I've been all over the board in terms of my performance. I've been a complete rock star in one company, and then, you know, not even arguably, but the absolute worst person within an organization prior to Roundpeg. And so my skills and abilities weren't any different. It was just the fact that I was not a great fit to the culture, but then also I wasn't getting what I needed out of the job from my manager as well.
Nice. Brenna, I got to ask you about innovation. What are y'all seeing as the relationship between culture and innovation?
Well, it's really interesting, and we're all just beginning to scratch the surface of this, but taking a look at what that, you know, how you actually go about constructing teams from a cultural perspective, there's a lot of push and pull that happens within those teams. And so some of the things that we're finding right now is that you really need to promote autonomy, so allowing individuals to, you know, to have some time to think, to go off and create the you know, create those ideas that they can, but then the counterbalance of that is having a group of folks that are incredibly team-oriented, so that they're then able to come back to the table and share those ideas and, you know, really take some decisive action from there. And so when we take a look at the cultural values that we measure, you know, some of those critical ones are autonomy, being team-oriented. You actually, you know, you need some conflict around decisiveness. You know, you need somebody sitting there at the table to drive to a solution, and yet you still need people to be a little bit reflective to understand, okay, well, here's why this won't work. Here's why this didn't work in the past. And so, you know, there's no, you know, we haven't, you know, cracked the riddle yet, but we're getting pretty close. The understanding of, you know, what are some of those conflicts that we need, and then the importance of the manager to be able to mitigate those and to manage through those.
You know, Brent, while you're talking about that team aspect, this thing comes to my mind is, like, you know, there are some organizations where the work culture itself is highly political. So, but still, they are successful. As an organization, they are successful. So why do you think some highly political workplace culture can thrive?
Well, I think, at least, from our perspective, there is no one right culture. As an example, take a look at Walmart and Zappos. For years, Walmart was publicly browbeaten for the quote unquote culture that they had promoted. Not just internally, but how they treated their vendors as well. Zappos, they're the cover child for culture and how you actually go about doing things. Yet, when you dig beneath the surface and when it comes down to performance, they both are loosely within the same industry. They both are making mountains of money. They both have employees that are successful and are thriving within the organization. Yet, if you park your car in the parking lot, you'll know within 30 seconds of walking in the building which one you're at. And so there's definitely more than one way to skin a cat. And so when it comes down to culture, there are some companies that are going to want to and need to take a completely different tack.
Great. Well, Natalie, I want to go back to that innovation aspect of it. So for the organizations that are listening to or the HR professionals that are listening to help them know, what would be the foundation of innovation in an organization?
Well, we don't make broad stroke assumptions about what innovation means for every organization, because the truth is that innovation differs for every organization. And so it depends on what the goal is that the organization is trying to achieve. That speaks to what values are important that a particular organization would need to innovate around. So what's important at Nike in terms of what they need to do to innovate may look completely different from what would be true at another organization. And so we start with, well, what does innovation mean to you? What measures of success would you have a year or 2 years from now, if you had been really innovative as an organization, how would you know? And that's where we start. So we look at what does that look like for you as an organization? And then what kind of culture does that require? So we have another large Fortune 100 organization that we're working with around innovation. And the first step that we've taken is to understand, one, what does that mean for them as a company? Two, how are their people are wired today? And then three, what needs to shift in their organization in order to get to those measurable goals? And so now the conversation that we're having, we have an offsite next week, a two-day offsite, is focused on looking at what's the gap and what levers do we need to pull to close the gap. If we try to do too much too quickly within an organization, we will find that the initiative will blow up. When you're trying to move a culture or shift a culture dramatically and quickly, it's almost always set up for failure. So we need to be data-informed, we need to understand the gap, and then we need to make incremental moves towards closing that gap in really measurable ways.
All right, so y'all just added a team member. And a pretty high level team member at that. So we're curious as to what's it like to recruit. What's it like to go through onboarding? Like, take us behind the veil. How y'all made? How do you make the assessment? Do you do a lot of the same things do you do for your clients as it relates to culture and you're adding someone? And because if you don't mind, take us behind the veil a little bit into. What does talent attraction look like for Roundpeg?
Oh, yeah. Well, excellent question. That's certainly top of mind for us. So Kevin Grauman is our Roundpeg's new CEO and just started late last month, and we really feel incredibly fortunate to have Kevin on board. He has a wealth of experience both founding and running organizations in the HR software space. And he's really excited about being part of Roundpeg's story and Roundpeg's impact on the business community. So we feel really lucky to have Kevin aboard. We had a very rigorous selection process As you could imagine, we feel like if we can't hold the bar really high in terms of evaluating and ensuring culture fit, then we certainly can't be out there sort of speaking about it to the world at large. So we did use our exact process that we use with other organizations. We use that internally for all hires, and particularly, of course, for this one being such a critical member of our team. So from the selection process, ensuring that all of our candidates, including Kevin, completed the round peg survey so that we could look at his culture fit with us on the level of company, team, and manager, all the way through the interview process and to the onboarding process. So day one of Kevin's tenure, we brought him in before he had an opportunity to sit down and meet any of our team members, really. We used our onboarding guides, the round peg onboarding guides, to give him a very good understanding of the overall company culture, the executive leadership team that he would be joining, and how to, we use the one-on-one data that's provided in the round peg tool to give him insights into how to get the best out of each of his new colleagues so that he could really hit the ground running, avoid pitfalls that he might otherwise have to sort of jump in and climb out of during his first 90 days, and really allowed him to be more effective and more efficient in being able to add value to our organization really quickly.
Wonderful. Well, Natalie, this is a wonderful question that we normally ask to our guests, and it is so fascinating to hear the different responses from our guests. So as a culture expert, I wanted to ask, what do you value most? Do you value most the competency versus the culture fit?
Oh, yeah. Interesting question. Both are critical. You have to have the skills to do the job and to fit an organization's culture in order to thrive. Round peg, our belief and estimation is that organizations generally do a fine job of evaluating fit with the job, so competencies, fit with the skills that they need to bring to the table. What's lacking systematically across the business community is a really rigorous, measured understanding of culture fit or variance or misalignment between an individual and a particular organization. So, it's a good question to be able to say which is more important. We think both are very critical, but one really is lacking data usually within organizations, and is vastly more predictive of success within the organization. So, culture fit with the company, team, and manager predicts about 89% of whether an individual will thrive or fail within a particular organization. Skills, abilities, background, experience only explains about 11% of an individual's success. So we certainly lean towards the importance of culture fit, and particularly because we feel like that's such an unvetted territory.
And just as an example of that, we just posted a couple of jobs for more engineers, and we took a little bit of a different approach. So our headline is actually, Rails developer ninjas need not apply. So I think that we'll kind of get to the bottom of your question, because one of the things that we've fostered over the course of the last several years is a very team-oriented environment, and we recognize that no matter your role in the company, who you are is going to have an effect on those around you. And when you are a good fit with the rest of your team, you really have the ability to amplify the success of others. And, so what we're looking for, primarily is a good human being, and then secondarily having the chops to do the job.
So where should cultural fit, Where should that be in talent acquisition? Because it seems to me that a lot of people put it really, really far back after everything is said and done, and then they apply, if they apply, I should say, then they apply some type of cultural type of assessment. Where should that be in the entire talent acquisition universe? Where should recruiters, hiring managers, and even HR, where should we put cultural fit?
Well, it's we certainly are biased, so take it with a grain of salt. But you know, our belief, and this is you know how we operate, is that we put it on the front end, and it's certainly not a knockout by any means, but it really helps us to inform our decisions as we go through that entire funnel. I think if you look at the talent acquisition process historically, it's so fraught with bias at every step of the process that you know it's no wonder that you know we have about a 50-50 hit rate. And you know, the farther down in the funnel that you start to analyze culture fit, the more human bias has entered that equation. And so somebody along the line, whether it be the recruiter or the hiring manager or whomever, you know, they've already whittled it down to you know, the kind of the usual suspects, if you will. And so if it's one of those things where if you really are looking to do things a little bit differently, you can't do things the way you've always done them in the past.
And just to piggyback on that, what we know from the literature and research is that most hiring decisions are made based on two main factors. One is similarity to me as the individual doing the hiring. So there's a lot of research behind, and we've supported that as well with using round peg data, that most hiring decisions are made based on how similar an individual candidate is to the individual who's making the hiring decision, and chemistry. Do they pass the sniff test? Do I like them? Would I like to, you know, grab a meal with this individual or a drink? And those two pieces of data are not predictive of that individual's performance within the organization. So the sooner we can get in and provide information to hiring managers or HR professionals around what is the actual fit between this individual and the company, the team, and the manager, so that they can use that information to really focus their interviewing process, to hone in on those differences, to understand whether they're likely to be real risks for this individual or not, the more likely that company is to make a really good, informed hiring decision as opposed to hiring based on similarity or chemistry.
Wow. We've got about 2 minutes left in the show, and I told you we needed another 30 minutes in this one. But I want to get your take on personality assessments. So what do you all – I mean, HR has been buying personality assessments for 30 years-ish. What do you all think about personality assessments?
So, you know, personality assessments have certainly a great use within organizations, for sure. It's quite different from our perspective from looking at robust culture data. So, you know, culture personality assessments can be really useful for team building exercises, offsites, retreats, understanding some about how to work better with a particular individual. The gap, or what they typically miss, is one, we're talking about personality assessments look at really complex concepts. And so it's difficult to be able to use that information to develop, manage, and engage employees, and for sure to hire individuals. And so culture value, you know, when we talk about culture and the importance of culture, culture is really the core. It's the foundation of an individual, and it's the simple building blocks that make up who they are that are stable over the course of their adult lives. So while personality assessments certainly have usability in particular arenas within organizations, they are limited in their ability to grow a company and to help teams and bigger, larger groups and the entire organization to better understand that more mass wiring and to be able to use that information to kind of direct and prioritize within the organization.
Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, that is exactly why we love Round Peg, because they're smart, and they bring the smarts each and every day. So check them out, Round Peg, 2 G's, and you will love them as much as we do. Y'all, again, wish we had more time. We don't. We have to go ahead and say goodbye. Everyone, thank you for listening to Drive Through HR. Thank you to Natalie and Brent. And y'all have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Happy Valentine's Day.
All right, brother.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye.